Hi, I'm Alyssa Milano, and this is Sorry Not Sorry.
Ballot initiatives can be an important way for citizens to go directly to the legislature when their government refuses to listen. But now, politicians in some states are working to weaken citizen initiatives and increase veto power over them. To discuss, Alyssa and I have invited Chris Melody Fields Figueredo, Executive Director of the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center, onto the show.
Activists around the country are teeing up state ballot measures on a host of issues in 2024.
Abortion continues to be a top issue for many voters ahead of the primaries and general election in Florida. The 2024 ballot could include a referendum to ensure abortion rights in the state.
A ballot measure can be the most expensive political campaign that happens on a statewide level.
Really?
It's not atypical for California ballot measures to cost more than $100 million. And we're seeing the same level of spending in a lot of other states.
The push to change ballot initiatives continues tonight, putting your voice and vote at risk. Tonight, some Missouri lawmakers are using ballot candy, pairing a popular idea with a more controversial one to win over voters like you.
I am Chris Melody Fields Figueredo from the great state of Texas, and I am fighting to make sure that we, the people, have a voice in our democracy, especially queer Latinas like me. Sorry, not sorry.
Chris, welcome to Sorry Not Sorry. I guess let's start out with just you telling us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Thank you for having me. So I have the privilege of leading the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center. What does that mean? That means we support the amazing people in the states and in local communities that want to take issues to the ballot to make change for their communities. So we provide training, we provide research, we look at the landscape. And we really want to make sure that ballot measures, especially, or direct democracy, is led by, dreamed of by the communities most impacted. Those of us who have been marginalized and kept out of decision-making rooms and a part of our democracy. So we provide support to the people in communities to make sure that they have equitable and winning campaigns on really critical, important issues across the country, like raising the minimum wage, reproductive freedom, our democracy itself, all those issues. We help support awesome people on the ground.
You know what I think would be helpful? Can you just give us a brief history of ballot initiatives in the U.S.?
Yeah, so it was born over probably 130 years ago. Now, at a time not too different from where we are right now in our country, when state legislatures, the people in governing power, were not listening to the people and were really controlled by special interests. Back then, the railroad barons, who completely controlled any type of legislation that was going through state capitals. And it was born out to give citizens, you and me, the ability to put issues directly onto the ballot and vote for them. And, you know, they've done a lot of amazing things. You know, it was born out of the progressive era. And then there were really dark times that, you know, they were used to take away LGBTQ rights, environmental protections, and really became a tool of conservatives to block progress in our country. And then in the last 10 years, especially Black and Brown communities have been turning to ballot measures, especially in Republican trifecta states, to take issues that they want direct action on, raising the minimum wage, Medicaid expansion, expanding voting rights, you name it, all these issues that we can't see move through our state capitals that are widely popular have been led by amazing people of color in the state. So it's born out of resistance, I would say, and it was taken over for a period of time by conservatives to take away the power and the will of the people or use it in ways that were not for us and all of us. And in the last decade has really been reignited, especially by communities of color, to make change.
I can just hear out there the trolls, because this is what they do. They're going to say, we're not a democracy, we're a constitutional republic, not understanding that a representative democracy is, in fact, still a democracy. But they'll say that, and they'll be like, yeah, we elect representatives to pass laws for us, and these ballot initiatives are just a waste of taxpayer money. Of course, to them, it's only a waste of taxpayer money when it's progressive ballot initiatives. But I wonder if you can just explain why these ballot initiatives matter so much. Why are they so important?
Well, they're really so important because, yes, there's representative democracy and there's the Constitution, there's the courts, right? All of these are different pieces of what makes our democracy. Legislative, executive body, the judiciary, right? But people forget that us, the people, are the most important part of our democracy. And we really look at ballot measures as a collaborative way of governing and making sure that people's voices are actually heard in part of the decision-making table. You know, representative democracy is so critically important, especially, you know, the movement to make sure that more representations of women, people of color, queer folks in legislative bodies, but that's the ending point. And so it has been really critical, especially in the last decade, when we have such a rigged system. I quote my friends Molly and Prentice from Ohio, who helped with a really important ballot measures last year in 2023. Ohio's not a red state, it's a rigged state.
CNN projects that voters in Republican-leaning Ohio have approved the ballot measure to establish a state constitutional right to an abortion, Ohio becoming the seventh state in the nation where voters have backed abortion rights since Roe v. Wade was overturned last year. The Ohio vote is likely to reinforce Democrats' plans to make abortion rights central to their message in 2024. Again, CNN projecting the abortion rights ballot measure in red Ohio will be approved.
So many states have been gerrymandered in a way that we actually don't have true representation in many states because the rules have been changed in favor of one political party, Republicans in a lot of states. And so really, ballot measures have been so critical for us in the last decade to make any type of change that is common sense to most people. People are hurting out there. Raising the minimum wage, regardless of party affiliation, that makes sense to people. People need wages and benefits. People understand that we need paid sick leave. People understand that Medicaid, getting health care to people who don't have access to health care, especially people who are economically disadvantaged, it's a no-brainer for folks. And I think that's a thing that people forget, especially in the last several years. In a lot of these issues, in states have won by not just Democrats, it's been Republicans and independents, especially what we've seen in the last 2 years around reproductive freedom and those winning at the ballot.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The thing that's so worrying about the whole undermining access to voting, you mentioned gerrymandering, but also this trend of like who can vote and when and how they can vote. But we've also seen like a series of initiatives in states where legislators are trying to make it harder for ballot initiatives to even be included on ballots or to pass if they do get on the ballot. What's going on with that?
Listen, the people are winning. That's what's happening. And we're winning on these issues when we put them before voters. So really, after 2016, when we started to see this first wave of progressive wins, specifically on minimum wage, and then we started to see the second wave around Medicaid expansion and voting rights in 2017 and 2018, BISC, the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center, the organization that I run, started to see an uptick in a couple of ways. One, legislatures or governors, LePage in Maine, for one example, absolutely refusing to implement these voter-approved popular initiatives, really starting with Medicaid expansion and minimum wage. Then we started to see bills crop up to change the way we have to gather signatures, who can gather signatures, the threshold to pass ballot measures. You know, when we elect somebody for office, right, it's 50%+, the majority rules. What they have started to do is raise the threshold to actually win a ballot measure. And this really came to a head after the 2018 election, when we saw that wave of progressive issues win on issues like restoring voting rights to formerly incarcerated or returning citizens in Florida. And then what we saw immediately the state legislature do was not only try to refuse to implement restoring voting rights, in the next election, they introduced a bill and put it on the ballot. And Florida already has the largest threshold to pass a ballot measure, which is 60%. It's the highest in the country. Amendment 4, restoring voting rights to returning citizens, won by 64% of the vote in 2018. The legislature introduced and referred a ballot measure to the ballot in 2020 to raise to 65%. The people saw through it. It was overwhelmingly rejected. But we've seen this crop up everywhere. But when Dobbs' decision happened and we started to see the wins in Kansas, in Vermont, in California, in Kentucky, in Michigan, right? All of those, after the people overwhelmingly voted for reproductive freedom, we immediately saw state legislatures try to change the rules again and now have gotten really sophisticated. Now what we're seeing is the courts playing a huge role in preventing ballot measures from getting onto the ballot, rejecting the signatures. Some states have collected more than double the amount of signatures, and those have gotten knocked off the ballot. Attorney generals are playing a role in not approving the language or approving ballot measures to the ballot title boards. This really came into play last year in Ohio. They're trying to change the language to make it more confusing to voters. And it really came at a head last year in Ohio last year, when literally from the chambers of their legislature, when there was a reproductive freedom measure moving, they were saying, no, we don't want this to happen in our state. Even though it was citizen driven, they referred a ballot measure to the August primary, which, for the record, they had already voted to never happen again, to not include these special elections. They made an exception to try to undermine the will of the people. It lost. Turnout for primary or special elections, we all know, is historically low. 3 million people turned out in an August special election in Ohio in an odd year to say, no, we are not going to listen to minority rule. One person, one vote.
Now, the special election day is just in 2 days, and more than 530,000 Ohioans have already voted early. It's nearly double the early voting numbers compared to the state's past two midterm primary elections. Now, this August special election day is going to be August 8th, Tuesday, and it's deciding issue one, which voters can cast a ballot for or against. Now, for some context, if issue one is passed, it raises the threshold of voters needed to pass constitutional amendments to 60% versus the current simple majority.
That is what our democracy is about. And then they turned around again and voted for reproductive freedom and legalization of marijuana. The average vote in an odd year election in Ohio is around 1 million. That's the average turnout. 3.3 million people turned out to vote last year. So ultimately, this is about the will of the people, who gets a say in our democracy. And that's playing out right now in state legislatures all across the country, especially in states that are trying to move forward reproductive freedom.
You mentioned the language of the ballot initiatives and how they appear on the ballots. I'm glad that you did, because I used to live in Massachusetts, and anytime there was a state election there, prior to the election, we would receive in the mail a voter guide. This voter guide would have approved language that would be from either side of the ballot initiative, but it would be fact-checked language stating why you should or should not. And then on the ballot, there would be a name of the bill and also It would say a yes vote does this and a no vote does this. Can you just talk briefly about like why that language matters?
And they try to make it as confusing as possible so that you don't have a clue what to vote. I mean, that's, I think, part of the whole strategy, right?
I mean, in some states, the actual, I always forget which state, I think it's South Dakota, the petition language has to be the size of a beach towel. Tell me, in what world it is easy for anyone to walk around, knock on people's doors with a piece of paper the size of a beach towel. And in California, it's such a great example, right? Of like, one, how long the ballot can be and how confusing the language can be as well. So that language is so critically important because, and this actually shows up in our research that we've done. We just did an 11-state survey to understand what voters think about the changes to the process and the interference by state legislatures. And guess what? They trust themselves the most. And they do not, like 92% of the people that we surveyed said that ballot measures are an important way to make their voices heard and participate in our democracy. So that language is so important because what we've seen for our research is people don't want to make mistakes. They care deeply about their communities. And so they're actually more likely to vote no if they're confused or don't understand the language than vote yes, which is often, for most part, you know, what we're trying to say yes for reproductive freedom or yes for raising the minimum wage. And so that language is so critical. And those voter guides are so important. And the grassroots community-driven organizations are even more important because they're the ones going into communities, having conversations with voters, trying to disarm any of the disinformation that's happening because it's such a big part of the political process. So that language is critical to make sure that the people understand what they're voting on and ultimately want the assurance that they're going to make the right decision because they know how much it will impact their community.
I'm glad you mentioned that survey because one of the things that stood out to me, I read the survey and surprised me a little bit, is that it's not a political base of support for this or a partisan base of support. People across the spectrum, they want these initiatives to be binding, they want them to be accessible, and they want the process to be protected. So why are so many legislatures trying so hard to expressly override the will of what their constituents want right now?
Well, I think this is so deeply tied to what we're seeing across the country, and let the trolling begin because sorry, not sorry, it's the truth. We are moving towards authoritarianism and minority rule in this country. That's a fact. Every academic, every person who understands democracy across the country, everyone who is an authority around democracy is looking at what's happening in the United States. I'm Venezuelan American. I know about dictators. And so, you know, to the people, regardless of party affiliation, they kind of are calling the bluff. And they're seeing through what is being said as, you know, we're protecting the rights in our states, or, you know, some state legislatures are saying we're trying to prevent out-of-state people from trying to drive the agenda in our state. When the fact is, the majority of these ballot measures are driven, a significant amount of them are driven by local groups and local communities. And so what we have seen from the people, and, you know, actually a friend reminded me, it's not that there's actually voter apathy out there. It is that people actually do want to participate. They do want to make decisions and want to be active participants in the decisions that rule their lives. It's that we have forgotten to center them and listen to them and what they want.
There's also just roadblocks, right? If you're looking at, like, you know, Ben's from Massachusetts, you look at that, you know, they slow walked access to marijuana, for example, in Florida. The legislature, governor, and the court seriously undermined a voter-approved amendment on restoring felon voting rights, which you also mentioned before.
In this advisory opinion to the governor, the state Supreme Court says felons must complete all terms of their sentence before registering to vote. And that includes all fines, fees, and restitutions that judges may order them to pay. Now, this has been a big debate ever since voters approved Amendment 4, with supporters equating to having to pay before you can vote to a poll tax. Republicans have said the language has always been clear. Felons must complete their time and pay before they regain those voting rights. The ACLU released a statement today in response saying we should all be concerned by the governor's attempts to eliminate the voting rights of hundreds of thousands of Floridians.
How is that happening? How is that allowed?
That is how the rules are currently written. So this is where actually in some states, courts have been really critically important back when they were trying to stop the implementation of Medicaid expansion. For example, in Maine, the courts came in and said, no, this is what the people voted for. You have to move forward. This just now in Florida, they're trying to kick off the reproductive freedom ballot measure because the opposition, the state, you know, Ron DeSantis is saying the ballot language is too confusing. And the state Supreme Court, which is, you know, this is DeSantis back Supreme Court saying, no, Floridians know what's happening. So essentially what is happening across the country is state legislators are trying to game and rig the system or change the rules in their favor and not the favor of the people. That's what's happening. And so tied to the rules around voting and who can vote and when they can vote. This is all very much connected to what's at stake for our democracy. And basically, conservatives trying to determine what people can and cannot do.
And speaking of conservatives, what I see is some cynical misuse of ballot initiative of the process, because I think it's important to acknowledge it in order to try and stop it from happening. And in particular, I'm thinking about an example from 2004, where several states put constitutional amendments banning marriage equality on the ballot in an effort led by Karl Rove to boost turnout for George W. Bush. Because of this initiative in Ohio, it may have resulted in Bush's reelection, all because a political operative, right, weaponized hate, which we're seeing that now, to manipulate a presidential election. Is there a way to stop that from happening?
There is, and it's happening in the states right now. We are so privileged to support a lot of amazing groups that are doing just the most badass work on the ground and have been able to, I mean, we just had a victory in Utah to prevent the state legislature from raising the thresholds. So it really has, citizens have been so engaged and have been so critically important to making sure that we're stopping this in the state legislature. And almost every time something has been referred by a state legislature to undermine the will of the people, make it harder for the people, citizens, to bring issues to the ballot, almost every single time citizens have rejected that. So that is actually the greatest arsenal we have right now. Don't want to use like a military term, but it's the first thing that came, especially with what's happening in the world right now. But that is what we have in our back pocket right now is us. It's the people. We are fighting back. We are stopping this happening in state legislatures. We are stopping it happening at the ballot. And what is so critical, especially on these issues, marriage equality is a very important example of how critically important these grassroots community-driven organizations are in this process and having a seat at the table to counter when these bad actors come in and try to put issues on the ballot that do actually represent their community. And that's how we started to change the tide on marriage equality and start to win at the ballot on it. So I can't emphasize enough of how important it is to have really strong coalitions of folks that have different ways to engage, whether you're going to be knocking on doors or doing phone calls or going into the communities or fighting on the legislative level or fighting this in the courts. That coalition of people that come together, and that's one of my favorite things about ballot measures, is how it creates a coalition of people to fight together for issues that are so critically important or stop really bad shit from happening.
I want to jump in on that as well, because I know this isn't exactly the same thing as a ballot initiative, but I think it's about one half step away from it. And we're seeing a lot of this. Alyssa, you're in California, which is part of why I bring this up. I just read an article in the last couple of days about what I believe is now the third recall petition against Governor Newsom in California. And while these aren't ballot initiatives, they share a lot of the mechanics of ballot initiatives and some of the similarities of them. And I wonder what just both of you think about something like that, where a ballot initiative has failed or a recall petition has failed.
They're doing it because they want to try to undermine his potential presidential candidacy whenever that day does come. They're using it as a talking point for the future, where someone will be on a debate stage and be like, Governor Newsom, they filed 3 recall petitions for your state, and it's so nefarious. Besides the fact that it just takes up so many of our resources
Absolutely. I think this is what you see. I mean, this is actually what's happening right now with these legislatively referred measures to prevent citizens from having access to the ballot. They lose at almost every single time, and millions of dollars are spent. So one of the lessons learned, especially in a state like California, where ballot measures are often really not driven by people, they're driven by industry. I mean, how many dialysis ballot measures have you voted on?
With some of those ballot measures, we saw spending at record-setting levels, only to see those propositions go down in defeat. To get some insight, I talked with some experts.
Yet again, California is setting records for the amount of money involved in the people's process.
Prop 26, which sought to legalize sports betting online in tribal casinos and licensed racetracks in California, was funded by gaming tribes with more than $175 million behind it. Whereas Prop 27, which aimed to legalize sports betting online and on mobile apps, was bankrolled by online gambling sites DraftKings and FanDuel at over $420 million, setting records as the most expensive ballot measure in California and U.S. history.
There are opportunities not only to just think about defending the bad actors, but actually how do we strengthen laws to actually serve the purpose of what, in the case of California, actually serve the purpose of why ballot measures existed in the first place, to be citizen-led versus if the state legislature passes an environmental protection, then you see the energy industries immediately put a ballot measure to counter that. So all of this is really to suck resources and suck money. And to what you said, Alyssa, be a talking point that actually isn't really the reality of what people want or need in their communities.
We have all the corporate access to voters and the motivation for corporations, you know, just be their profits. Here in California in 2022, we had two ballot initiatives about sports betting, where hundreds of millions of dollars spent by these corporations. Do you worry that the intersection of like Citizens United and ballot initiatives just corrupts the whole damn process? And what do we do about that?
I mean, there is a huge movement around overturning Citizens United. It absolutely changed the game. And has, because of what the Supreme Court ruled, that corporations are people, has had a reverse effect on corporations putting more issues to the ballot. It has made it a lot harder for certain issues like anything around clean energy or the Green New Deal or climate change. It has made it harder to put those issues on the ballot. Some industry giant will spend $120 million to try to defeat it. I will say, despite all the money in the world and money being a big piece of power, we ultimately have to win as hearts and minds. And when we can get into communities and have real conversations and counter the disinformation, Prop 22 in California is another one where people were ultimately lied to by Lyft of what the worker protections were. You know, that's why it's so important to make sure that we are countering by investing in the community-driven groups to make sure that the people can see through all the crumminess and the lies that they're getting tossed at them.
We've kind of hit little pieces of this over the course of the conversation, but I think we just need to sort of lay it out in one place. So here is the million-dollar question. How can we protect ballot initiatives as an institution, as a voter tool? How can we make them more effective while still ensuring that they're offered in good faith?
And then how can listeners support that work?
That's such a good question. I mean, the thing that I often think about when it comes to ballot measures and what people will say, the trolls will say, you know, this is why we have representative democracy, this is circumventing that, is I truly believe in collaborative governance. And that means there is a relationship and a responsibility between those who govern, those who are in elected office, and it's a responsibility to their constituents. And what democracy to me means is that we are active collaborators and visionaries and have a seat at the table to determine what happens in our lives. And so what people can do right now, and it's happening across the country in states like Arizona and Florida and Missouri and Utah, Nebraska, you name it, you can get involved in organizations right now who are fighting in state legislature. Right now, having witnesses go to committee hearings, to state legislative hearings, and fighting back and saying no. I actually believe fundamentally that we need ballot measures and direct democracy, and that's my voice. Like, that's one way you can get engaged right now. You also need to raise up and talk about this. Like, I'm a nerd. The three of us are nerds, probably, and we know about this, but the public has no idea that this is happening under their watch. And so for the listeners, you got to get in your communities on whatever platform you use and raise your voice and talk about it.
Chris, will you please just give us a preview of some of the ballot initiatives that are so important on the ballot in 2024? Where do you think we're going?
Well, reproductive rights all the way. Right now, 13 states are collecting. Either some states like Maryland already have constitutional rights to protect abortions in their state constitutions. New York already has an equal rights style amendment on their ballot that also has pregnancy protections on the ballot. That's already happening. But in states right now like Arizona, Nebraska, Missouri, Colorado, Montana, and Nevada, they're collecting the signatures right now in their states to protect reproductive freedom.
How regretful are some Republican strategists that the Supreme Court ruled in their favor?
I mean, so what I hear from Republicans, as well as Democrats in the state of Arizona, is they see that if abortion is on the ballot, which it very well could be in the state of Arizona in 2024, that poses a real challenge for Republicans. Because much like what you saw in Ohio, Arizona is currently, they're gathering signatures to put this ballot referendum on, to put a constitutional right for abortion in 2024. I was out just tag teaming, watching people do these ballot signatures, voter after voter, afterwards I'd interview them. And they would say, you know, I'm not really aligned with the Democratic Party. Some of them, Republicans, some of them, like, I don't like anybody. But they were out there to sign this ballot referendum. And that's the thinking Democrats have, and that is the fear Republicans have, is that voters will turn out for this abortion issue. And while they're there, hey, just vote for the Democratic
Party. They might just vote.
Potentially.
There's also a big trend around raising the minimum wage and paid leave. States like Ohio, Massachusetts, Missouri, Oklahoma, Alaska, Nebraska are all looking towards having some type of economic justice ballot measure. And then democracy itself. Right now, we're tracking 96 measures in 24 states that would impact our democracy in some way. And critically important, which we've talked about, issues make it to the ballot that around taking away this important tool. And then finally, the emerging issues that we're seeing are around quote-unquote parental rights. We know that that is a dog whistle, around school vouchers. And we are starting to see what has happened through state legislatures on the attacks of LGBTQ youth and trans people start to make its way to the ballot. Nothing has made it to the ballot yet, but we're starting to see the things that are moving from the state legislature to the ballot. So these are all really critically important in your home state. In California, there are some groups that are doing local measures around environmental protections. The two trends that we're seeing are around reproductive freedom in our democracy, followed by economic justice, which is not surprising, right? If you think about what people are gathering and talking about right now, they're very concerned about what's happening with our democracy. They're very concerned about what's happening to reproductive rights, and people still need to have the wages and benefits to live their lives and provide for their families. So those are the big trends that we're seeing.
And how can people support Ballot Initiative Strategy Center?
Well, we have a great website. If you want to nerd out all things ballot measures, go to ballot.org. And on there, we have the Ballot Measure Hub, which is our like one-stop shop to tell you more about ballot measures, where it is in your states, what's moving through your state. It really is a great resource for anybody that wants to learn more about the citizen-led process. If it exists in your state, and then, you know, if you want to, absolutely, you can donate to our organization as well.
Finally, what gives you hope?
Oh, gosh. You know, I am the mother of a 16-year-old Black girl, and she gives me hope every single day. She's the most brilliant human being who is joy embodied and is a light in this world. And I listen to her and her friends, or these questions that adults are having, right? Alleged adults are having about, you know, trans kids. And I think of Bex, and you know, I'm a queer kid who grew up in Texas. I think of Bex. It's not a question for them. It's not a question. These are their friends. These are their fellow students. Like, when I hear her and her friends speak about, like, it's not a question about reproductive freedom and bodily autonomy, or like, it's just not a question for them. And that gives me hope. This younger generation, it's not just the path forward. It's our present that we have to listen to.
Well, Chris, you give us hope. Thank you for all you do and for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm Jaspreet Chowdhury with the Ballot Initiative Strategy Center. I'm excited to partner with the State Innovation Exchange's Democracy Project to talk to you about ballot measures, why you as a progressive legislator should care about this important tool, and how you can identify and disrupt common tactics conservatives deploy to undermine direct democracy. Very simply, a ballot measure or ballot initiative is direct democracy, a place where eligible voters can make decisions about policies that impact them in their daily lives. Advocates use ballot measures to win public policy that has stalled under the dome, or to apply pressure or to raise awareness about an important topic or change the underlying narrative about an important issue. Ballot measures should be understood as complementary, not oppositional, to your daily work inside the Capitol. We all win when legislators work with advocates to move progressive policy.
In an era of gerrymandered legislatures who seem to have no accountability at all to the people they represent, ballot initiatives are critical tools for Americans to use to protect the rights and benefits of those who choose to call the United States home. They're something we have to protect at all costs, not just from those unaccountable politicians, but also from corporations, hate groups, and others who would use them for profit or for publicity. Access to a ballot should be a sacred right in this country, for its people, but never, never for bad actors who would use them to manipulate the electorate. The power these initiatives provide can ensure the people remain in control of the government, but only when they are used in good faith. In a perfect world, they would be unnecessary because our elected leaders would be elected by congressional districts that are not designed to preserve the power of one party over another, and they would be responsive to the wishes of their constituents. But we don't live in a perfect world, and therefore we need to both enhance and protect this critical check on rogue politicians.
Sorry Not Sorry is executive produced by Alyssa Milano. That's me. Our producer is Ben Jackson, audio editing and engineering by Maciej Lewandowski, and music by Josh Cook, Alicia Eagle, and Milo Bugliari. Don't forget to rate, review, and spread the word. Sorry, not sorry.